And welcome everybody over on YouTube. We're over on YouTube too. Everyone's on YouTube, so welcome to the service that we just lambasted for the past hour or so. I made it over, I think. Kyle, you're there?
Yes, I am.
The other side of the studio. Okay, and Rob?
Yes, indeed.
And Alex. Alex, where's Alex?
I see the view behind Alex, but there's no Alex in front of it.
What is the issue getting Alex onto overtime? It really seems to be a hard transition.
He seems to have stepped away, but I have faith that he'll come back to us.
Well, last time he stepped away, he didn't come back. So, you know, and since we don't have Gila this week, you can't do overtime with three people, Rob. You need at least four. Those are the rules.
I mean, I could put on more voices if that
helps. No, you know what I mean. People don't take things seriously. That's the problem. Okay. All right. Well, that's how it's going to be. So we don't have Gila, as I mentioned, which means you're handling the chat.
I am.
And you've never done that before. So this could be a disaster, right?
I'm always up for a new disaster.
All right.
But I would like to say hello to the chat and, thank you everyone for joining us. And Gila said, please be nice to me while I do her job poorly.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll determine that. We'll be the ones that determine. Our phone number, 802-321-4225 for people who want to call in. We do have a couple more stories we want to get to, we want to talk about. But obviously, if there's an urgent call, we'll take that because, you know, that's one of the purposes of this program.
The phone lines are open.
They are open, yes. Not unplugged this week. Yeah, we had unplugged for 25 minutes before we realized what was going on last time. And we're sorry, all the people that called in and didn't get through.
Everything works.
Yeah, everything works now. It does. Okay, well, I guess I'll just dive into this then. Adobe. You guys use Adobe, right? Oh, now the phone's ringing as soon as I start the story. Well, I guess we can take it.
Please do.
All right. We'll get to this Adobe story. We will. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Bob Gett.
Hey, what's up?
Okay. A couple of things from the earlier show. Various applications can tell if your cell phone has been rooted. Banking applications can do that. So don't root your phone. There's hardly any reason to do that. If your ID or something is on your phone and someone has to look at it and know it's not just a picture, if you've ever been on a MTA train and bought a ticket online or with the app, it shows the ticket to the conductor. It's got like moving lights and it uses the camera so that it can obviously be a live image and you can't fake it.
Got it.
Don't hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, further, the Microsoft Recall thing just records things locally, as far as I can tell, which is not a big deal, as long as your system is secure enough to prevent anybody from looking at things live.
But did they convince people?
Hold on. The point is every 5 seconds, right? Does that not mean it stores it someplace?
On your local computer.
Right. And if you lose your local computer, now the thief has everything you've done on your desktop window for however long that database goes back. As do the authorities, as does anybody that gains access to it.
Yes, and I can look at your browser history and see what you've been looking at lately.
Well, yeah, and that's one reason I don't give out my browser history, and I don't tend to lose my laptops. But, browser history is one element of this. They can still do that, but now you've given them something else.
You're opting in, okay? And this was described over 30 years ago by David Gelernter, the Yale professor, in his system called Life Streams. And the way that works is, let's say I remember that I went to the first Hope convention and I want to remember what else was happening that weekend. And so I could go look back through my history and see that it wasn't just Hope that was happening. It was the 25th anniversary of Woodstock was happening. And I would have everything recorded so that I don't have to remember every little detail of my life. and the system was called LifeStreams. And one of the people who objected to this was named Ted Kaczynski.
Wait, well, he happened to be in the audience?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought it was some kind of seminar or something.
He sent a bomb to David Gelernter because he opposed this memory thing. It's technology that helps normal people remember things because people
Wait, hang on one second. So you're saying, I don't know if you are saying this, but you're saying that the idea of this recall type feature proposed back then was what inspired the Unabomber?
One of the things, yes.
My goodness. Well, you'd think Microsoft would back down then, knowing that, that's what it inspires in people. But boy, that's interesting. I think what they were describing back then is different than this. It sounds more self-contained and user-controlled. Like, you know, I don't trust when Microsoft does this. I'm sorry?
It's local. It's on your machine.
Mm-hmm.
You can throw your machine in a fire, and it will destroy all your memories, but... Why would you do that?
Why is it unencrypted? Why does it have to be unencrypted? I mean, at least put a password on it so that if someone does steal your machine or right. hacks into your network, they won't immediately get access to that.
My computer is encrypted. I'm running Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running BitLocker. And if you steal my hard drive, it's useless to you. If you take the machine away, in 10 seconds, it turns off. And you have to put in my passwords, which you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You could beat them out of me, but hey, you could beat me to death too.
Uh huh. Well, you're the exception. Okay, a lot of people don't do that, so that's what I worry about.
They should. That's instead of being freaking out that Microsoft is doing something evil, let's teach people that they can lock their computers down so that it's useless to anybody who steals them.
Sure, I'm all in favor of that, and we're not freaking out over Microsoft. We're basically accepting it with quiet resignation because they have a history of this kind of thing.
And also trying to imagine what in the future they're trying to build and what and otherwise sell to consumers as sort of everyday normal practices in your computing life. And by all means, yeah, like we need more stories about how people are learning and teaching one another. To protect themselves in all regards, partly why we try to get stories like this out there. So thanks for your observations about the story, though.
Yeah, Alex has something to add.
Yes, I'm back too.
Welcome.
I see the caller's point about the things running locally being not as dangerous, but I think, caller, you are operating under the assumption that the security controls surrounding your device are always going to be effective. Vulnerabilities are found for these types of things all the time. Exploits come out every day. You don't necessarily need access to the entire file system in order to access a device. Or if you do somehow manage to get access to the device itself, then all of that local data can be compromised. But I think another aspect of this that we should also think about is that You mentioned your file system is encrypted. We cannot, I think, assume that encryption is always going to be effective as well. I mean, we are on our way quite rapidly towards living in a post-quantum computing world where all of our encryption algorithms right now may be subject to attack by way of quantum computing. And if that's the case, then all of that local data, whether encrypted or not, could be accessible to some kind of malicious threat actor.
Also, the computers are networked like most of their operating day when you're using it chiefly, but in other regards as well. And the idea that, yes, the data is stored and processed on the machine, sure, but, I mean, you're also... I mean, it's not... necessarily the case that these are all offline installations of those operating systems.
But who is going to expend the effort to use a quantum computer, which does not exist yet, to attack me when I'm trying to remember the name of the place that I went to get cheesesteaks in Philadelphia in 2001.
Was it Jim's on South Street? They had a fire, and I think they're rebuilding.
And it wasn't Pat or Gino's either.
Yeah, Pat or Gino, everyone goes to them, but Jim's is the real place. I was really heartbroken when that had a fire.
I think it was University, but I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
I might have the menu around still.
Was it on 6th Street?
I don't know.
Not 6th Street, South Street. I'm in the wrong city. I'm in Austin. No, in Philadelphia, South Street. I'm sorry. Yeah, sidetrack. Yeah, that's a good question, you know, but at some point, it could become an issue, or it could become an issue a lot sooner than that. Look, all I was saying before is that they should have talked to people who are experts in the field of security and privacy, and it didn't seem like they did any of that because those two fields are jumping all over this, and it just didn't seem well thought out.
Copilot, recall Bobcat's cheesesteak. Is that the command? Like,
yes. I remember that day very well, by the way. But I don't remember the name of the cheesesteak place we went to.
Speaking of Woodstock in 1994, do you remember how hard it rained up there? You know, I remember seeing the New York Times on that Sunday, and we were, you know, snug in the hotel pen, but people in upstate New York were living in misery. It was kind of like the first one because it rained a lot then too.
Yes, well, naked and muddy is the best way to listen to music.
I suppose so.
There was one good memory of the original Hope. Nobody recorded this, but there was a guy who was he was younger than we are now, but he's sitting in the hallway and bored out of his mind, and his son wanted to go to Hope. And so someone said, "What are you doing here?" It's like, "Well, my son wanted to come. I work for the phone company. I'm not really interested in this stuff." So we start talking to this guy, and he tells us that, yes, you can spy on anybody if you work for the phone company. So he had like a whole crowd around him listening to him talk about phone stuff for an hour. It was really great. And the thing is, someone said, who'd you spy on? And he mentioned some famous actress. And well, then what? He's like, yeah, it was boring. I stopped. I don't do it anymore. Nobody does it after the first time.
Just out of curiosity, since the building no longer exists, where did that conversation take place?
The 18th floor, across from the elevator. There was a couch across from the elevator.
Okay, yeah, I know. I remember it. Go ahead, Rob.
Just someone chiming in on the YouTube chat, Mr. Underscore says, there's already malware made for recall. It's one of the reasons it's not shipping now.
Sweet.
Don't be so happy.
Oh, I'm thrilled.
It was inevitable. It was inevitable. Hey, thanks for your phone call.
All right, good.
Take care.
Bye.
See you next time. 802-321-4225. Let me just, before the next caller comes in, let me just get into it. I'm going to forget otherwise. There's a change to Adobe terms and conditions for apps like Photoshop. It's outraged many professional users. Concerned that the company is claiming the right to access their content, use it freely, and even sublicense it to others. The company is requiring users to agree to the new terms in order to continue using their Adobe apps, locking them out until they do so. That right there, I don't care what the story is actually about, but that move right there is a dick move. They lock them out until they agree to the new terms. Now, Adobe says its new terms clarify that we may access your content through both automated and manual methods, such as for content review. The terms say solely for the purposes of operating or improving the services and software, you grant us a non-exclusive, worldwide, royalty-free, sub-licensable license to use, reproduce, publicly display, distribute, modify, create derivative works based on, publicly perform, and translate the content. For example, we may sublicense our right to the content to our service providers or to other users to allow the services and software to operate with others, such as enabling you to share photos. Oh my God. Designer Wetten Schneider, who counts DC Comics and Nike among his clients, was one of the graphics pros to object to the terms. Here it is. If you are a professional, if you are under NDA with your clients, if you are a creative, a lawyer, a doctor, or anyone who works with proprietary files, it is time to cancel Adobe. Delete all the apps and programs. Adobe cannot be trusted. Movie director Duncan Jones was equally blunt in his response. Hey, Photoshop, what the hell is that new agreement you forced us to sign this morning that locked our app until we agree to it? we are working on a bloody movie here, and no, you don't suddenly have the right to any of the work we are doing on it because we pay you to use Photoshop. What the F? And I'm sorry. It was all caps. What was I supposed to do, Kyle? And they censored the last word, too. They did. So otherwise, I would have said it. Concept artist Sam Santana pointed out that if you can't raise a support request to discuss the terms without first agreeing to them, you can't even uninstall the apps. I can't even get a hold of your support chat to question this unless I agree to these terms beforehand. I can't even uninstall Photoshop unless I agree to these terms. Are you effing kidding me? I think maybe it's the news story that's bleeping out that word. I'm sorry about that. That's what's been going on. This is from 9 to 5 Mac. Now, apparently, Adobe has clarified since then. Their initial statement basically was nothing to see here, move along type tone. Their next explanation, though, I guess they realized the issue wasn't going to go anywhere. They offered a general explanation that it wanted to be transparent about the content checks it performs, along with a change log, which highlighted the amendments. The focus of this update was to be clearer about the improvements to our moderation processes that we have in place. Given the explosion of generative AI and our commitment to responsible innovation, we have added more human moderation to our content submissions review process. So they're blaming this on AI, I guess. Alex, you're a lawyer. Can you cut through all the crap and tell us if this is a good development, a bad development, if it's even a news story anymore?
Well, it's really crazy that it came out. I mean, that this happened and that Adobe let this happen in so many ways that it could have been predicted that there should have been a backlash against this. I mean, requiring acceptance of terms and conditions to proceed, I guess, is pretty standard in a lot of these software updates. But they should assume that certain people are going to read them and object to them. It's really beyond the pale crazy for companies to expect that any data that is created with their products is fair game for them to ingest in some way. But again, it goes back to everybody wanting to figure out some new data source for a new model, for a new type of AI system, some kind of new functionality that's going to be derived or created out of this massive amount of data that's ingested from all these different sources and various sources. And perhaps what Adobe could say in response, if we were to be their advocate, to be the devil's advocate in this particular situation, would be that, well, you know, we're not ingesting whole cloth your work and going to spit it out. They would say what all of the other large language models and AI systems that are being sued for copyright infringement are saying, that, you know, we're ingesting this, and it's essentially it amounts to a tiny fragment of what may be output at some particular time in the future. And so the idea that we're ingesting the entirety of your movie and somehow going to infringe upon it is fanciful. But it does not, I think, respect the commercial nature of the agreement between the user and the software developer. And I think it's a very sacrosanct relationship between a software developer and a user, in that you are trusting that software developer is going to respect your rights to the data that you are creating with that particular piece of software. And they've crossed that line. They've crossed some kind of Rubicon from which they can't now tread back so easily. They've lost a lot of user trust, and I don't think it matters anymore how they're trying to reel this back. The damage is done. The Rubicon is crossed, and Adobe's got a big problem on their hands.
One aspect of the way this is used, I think that is concerning, is the potential for people that are artists or producers of media using this technique, some of their processes and use of the Adobe product itself could be taken and used to create new tools that Adobe then integrates into their software, thus sort of eliminating maybe a burgeoning or a boutique business that specialized in a certain way or a certain form or a certain style, basically turning their whole differentiation in the market into like a paint bucket or something, and basically diminishing the skill and ingenuity they brought to creating actual works. So I think another aspect of this is that the tools and the features that they're starting to include, they don't necessarily have to wait for feedback or their own teams to come up with them. They're sort of have a greater ability to look at how their products are being used and learn from that and integrate it into their own development in ways we just cannot personally do ourselves yet, I think. And that's worth looking at, or at least considering, because there's a lot of work that goes into people's craft and the access they have. I mean, there's a certain trust there that, and then if all of a sudden the creative output can be used and learned from by all the systems that Adobe can bring to bear to use in some campaign. Like, you've seen their ads, like they do like meld different styles and go through. I mean, that's an example alone of stuff that they've probably either, I guess, contracted or licensed from actual users of their products. So imagine that on like a different scale and in a less visible scale. That's the interest they have, and they're kind of treating their like the users of their products as themselves sources of revenue for future tools
kinda,
when you employ these
like
products.
Employees that anything you create belongs to us. But yeah. I don't think that's what's happening here. I think they've walked it back. Maybe they phrased it badly in the first place.
Well, that's
and
the
they
clarity,
never intended
yeah.
for that. But what they did do was lock everybody out of their own software until they agreed. And that, to me, that's the real violation here that they cannot deny. And it's a wake up call to all of us using software in the cloud that they can turn it off anytime they want and really screw you up and have more control than they ever deserve. Rob, go ahead.
Some interesting thoughts in the YouTube chat about this. Our pal Johnny Fusion says, subscriptions for software are awful to begin with. I'd rather own than rent. And Tim in Connecticut says, yeah, time to get a new software. I prefer the software I own, not a subscription model. And what you were saying about the computer locking it up until you agree to the new terms. Alex, I wanted to know if you had any thoughts about this, because the fact that you agreed to terms of service to use a software and then they take you basically hostage later on with a new change to the terms, is that even something that they should be able to get away with doing?
Well, it doesn't seem like it, because what they are creating quite literally is a contract of adhesion. You don't have any opportunity to negotiate. You don't have any opportunity to reject this. They're forcing your hand if you want access to your data. So in a lot of ways, you could be considered to have accepted the contract under duress. Right? In order for a contract to be binding, when I always remembered the four elements of a contract when I was in law school by the mnemonic device, input, output, air conditioning. So you need an intent, offer, acceptance, and consideration. Consideration being a legal term of art, meaning essentially the price you pay for a promise, the value underlying the mutual promises that the parties are making to each other. And in this situation, it would seem that the element of acceptance would certainly be missing, because you don't necessarily have a choice. You can't say no to it. So I think it's literally a contract of adhesion, and would be pretty tough for them to try to enforce this, I think, if they were to try to rush to court.
Yeah, and like without notification and a way to feed back, you really can disrupt people's livelihoods en masse with this kind of stuff. And it's terrible to, I mean, how often have you walked into some place and try to transact or otherwise interact with people using commercial software for their business, and you hear like, oh, my screen crashed, or oh, the system's down, or oh, I can't do this, like at a hotel or anywhere. They always have like management stuff going on in the background, and things are slow and otherwise compromised or faulty. This is incredibly common when people are reliant on these systems, and that's when they're just sort of in the normal day-to-day, like course of business day. That activity gets magnified when they make these kinds of policy changes on the fly and expect people to just be able to turn their attention immediately to this new phenomena that they haven't really been able to consult and digest in a timely way that meets their activities and availability.
We see examples of this every day. Were you talking about the hotel we tried to check into?
I was thinking of that.
That poor guy. We got there late. It was at 2 a.m, and we're checking in, and the systems are down for backing up or something like that. He cannot access his own hotel systems because of somebody somewhere that started a process.
Well, they're all franchisees.
Exactly.
Right?
No, and we heard him calling them on the phone. They're treating him like you know, a customer, not a fellow employee. He's giving out his name, his password, all kinds of information just right out there for anyone to hear while we're, you know, standing around fascinated but also tired. And this, you know, if you check into a hotel after midnight, this could happen to you where you have to wait a half hour for them to back up their systems, and it's not even the fault of the people standing there. They have no control over the system. It's unbelievable that we accept these things.
But it's convenient for the larger companies to have a portfolio of properties.
Yeah,
like,
but you know what?
It makes it easy for them to encumber, to control.
It's not easier for any person who's awake at that hour. It's not easier for us. It's not easier for the employee. I'm sure the person pressing the buttons in whatever city they were in, it's not easier for them. Yeah, it's easier for the shareholders in the end, I guess. But boy, what a bad practice.
It cheapens it.
Do we have a phone call? Or
No, can you give the number out?
I'll give the number out then. 802-321-4225 is our phone number. 802-321-HACK. I'm looking at the computer screen. It's the 12th. It's exactly a month away from Hope. Hope begins on July 12th, July 12th through 14th. So, we are to just update people on that because we are so incredibly busy. In fact, I've been so busy that I have not been doing a lot of things I should be doing, i.e. getting back to people, showing up where I'm supposed to show up, except for, you know, this place, paying bills or returning phone calls, all that stuff, cutting the grass. Everything is just sort of put aside because we have to put together the schedule, and we're doing that right now for the conference. We have more talks than ever, it seems, and they're really, really good, too. A lot of workshops, a lot of villages. It's happening July 12th and 14th at St. John's University, and it's going to be a blast. We sent out a mailing yesterday letting people know that we do need to sell more tickets because it's I know this is something that's affected events around the country post-COVID and all. In fact, some recording artists have had to cancel their tours because they're not selling enough tickets. Well, we only need to sell another 300. I'm not sure how many we sold in the last day or so, but another 300 by the end of June, and we'll be fine. But we got to get there because you know, we have to survive. We have to keep the next conference a possibility in the future.
And so, we have a lot of things to add to the current event.
Yeah, we want to be able to rent things so that we can you know, have good AV equipment and all that. And you know, you can't do that with just a smile. So more information, hope.net. You'll see all the talks that are scheduled so far. If you have applied for a talk and you haven't heard back, check your spam folder, or it's possible that there just isn't room right now. It doesn't mean you can't give a presentation, though. We are going to have the unscheduled track. We'll send information out about that as well. But boy, this is going to be quite an event. It's completely different than last time. You know, if you were at the one at St. John's in 2022, yeah, we're going to be in a completely different part of St. John's. So there, people complained about the hill in St. John's. I mean, like we could do something about it. Like, it was, you know, our responsibility. Well, guess what? We did something about it. You don't have to climb the hill anymore because we're at the bottom of the hill. Yeah, we did that. We did that for you. Actually, it made more sense in many ways. But, you know, with a college campus, you can do things like that. And it's really a pretty awesome place. So hopefully we see a lot of you out there. Again, hope.net. All the information is there. You guys want to add anything?
I just personally am very excited about this. As you may know, I missed last time around because I had COVID, and I missed it. That was the first time I missed Hope since I started going in 2000, and so I have to get my streak back up. So just this and the next 22 years, and I'll be good.
Why weren't you there in 1997 and 1994?
I was going to be in there in 1997, but I couldn't get my day job off Well, wow. I couldn't get the time off from work.
You could have quit. You could have quit. Many people quit their jobs to attend. I mean, I'm not sure why that's a problem. All right. So how about 94? How do you explain that one?
94, I did not yet have the agency to get myself out there.
I'm learning a lot about you, Rob. Okay. All right. Alex, yes.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to it. And if people haven't noticed, I feel like I might have bitten off a bit more than I can chew this particular time around. I think I'm involved in three different talks at Hope.
Well, right? I hope you know.
Yeah.
You got to keep track of how many talks you're a part of. So, yes.
Yeah. I'm doing something really cool with the EFF with Cooper Quentin from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, as well as Lorax Horn and Emma Best from Distributed Denial of Secrets. Mm-hmm. And we are going to be talking about what's happening with Appen. That's the Appen Tech Center. And our listeners will remember that has to do with the Indian Hacker for Hire operation that Rafael Satter had reported on, and then there was an Indian court.
Wait, whoa, hold on. Isn't that the thing where if anybody who mentions it gets sued?
That's pretty much the case.
And we're doing a whole talk on it? We're having a talk about this thing where if you even say its name, their lawyers come after you, and we're going to have a talk in front of an audience and videotape for the world to see?
Yeah, we're going to.
Are you mad?
Absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely.
Because I would not expect anything less.
And mad in the sense of angry, too. So, you know, there's been a massive abuse of legal process, massive abuse of the courts for censorship, for even in, you know, this even reaches issues of making it perhaps contempt of court to ingest cyber threat intelligence about this group of threat actors in India. Perhaps there may even be some more interesting developments going on in this case before the Hope Talk. Another one that I'm doing is with Jason Long, who's one of the directors of the Innovation Lab of Human Rights First. And we're going to be talking about developing technology on a budget that has a human rights impact. And I'm on the Technology Advisory Board for Human Rights First. So that's going to be pretty cool. And I think that might be the first time that HRF is at Hope, which this will be a very, very cool first, and I'm sure it won't be a last. And the last one I'm doing is with Dan Nowak and Roel Schoenberg, and it's something of a continuation of the talk that we did in 2020 during the 9 days of Hope that has to deal with the proliferation of disinformation, and especially ahead of the election season that we are heading into, or already in, I guess. So I'll have my hands full at Hope. I think it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to hanging out with everybody and seeing everyone. And I think it's going to be an all-around great time.
We're going to have Cory Doctorow giving another talk. Johannes will be showing another one of his films. We're going to have the Radical Librarians there, whose mantra is, all computers are broken. I can hardly wait to see that one. Love Hackers and Robots, Making Surveillance Policy Change in Canada, Modern Day Automobile Safety, Rescue Ops Using CAN Bus. I'm just going through, reading one by one here, but there's about 100 talks that have been scheduled so far. I think we're pretty much full at this point, but it's a wide variety. It's the most interesting amount of material that I can imagine seeing in one place. It really is something. Protecting JetBlue Airways from Cyber Threats in the Clouds. Great title. It's great on the title alone, but...
Wait. Which cloud?
That's clouds. That's for you to decide.
Clouds, yeah. Like in the air?
How about
clouds,
this?
Or like cloud, like computer
protecting
cloud?
Protecting the network traffic of 1 billion people, reverse engineering Chinese cryptography. Yeah, so there's so much. I mean, we could just spend hours talking about all this. We don't have the time, but if you have the time to attend July 12th through 14th, St. John's University, easy to get to. If you're driving, free parking, you can't really beat that. And if you're not driving, Mass Transit gets you there dependably. And it's not Midtown Manhattan. We know that. That was our former location is a pile of rubble right now, so not much we can do about that. And finding an affordable place in Manhattan is about as impossible as you could imagine. But we found a great place. It's spacious. It's filled with potential and support. They have, you know, equipment that works. They have really well-maintained buildings and rooms, and it's just a joy to be there. Again, we're looking to have more people get tickets before the cutoff at the end of June. Also, we have virtual tickets, too, at a fraction of the cost, where you get to talk to other virtual people and attend all the talks virtually, but also support Hope so that we can continue doing this. Go ahead, Rob.
Our pal Tim in the YouTube chat asks if Mitch Altman will be there doing the soldering workshop again, and I'd like to address that. Of course he is. Not only is he doing that, he's doing four workshops this time around. Learn to solder with the I Can Solder badge kit. He's doing LED strips everywhere for everyone. He's doing Arduino for total newbies, and he's doing digital music synthesis, solder with an ArduTouch synth kit. So you can do a bunch of soldering with our good friend Mitch Altman at Hope this time around.
That's right. He's giving a talk, too. So there's that to look forward to. There's Robot Invasion, the Rise of Educational Robots, or Robotics, rather. Here's another talk about securing airlines in the clouds. That's different from the JetBlue one, but they also use the clouds. That's a popular way of saying this. So, yeah, go through hope.net. There's a whole section on talks that have been accepted so far, as well as workshops, and more information is being posted daily. Go ahead, Alex.
Hey, guys, I just wanted to say, and I apologize, but I'm going to have to jump a little bit early from you guys tonight. As you can probably see behind me, I'm still in the office.
Alex, every week you either don't show up or you leave early. We're going to have to discuss this.
Yeah.
we might have to bring other members of your family in to discuss this issue
that you seem to
have.
My 11-year-old will be at Hope with me as well.
Well, he's going to have to be consulted on this because
it's his fault that I have to leave.
Is it trouble at home? Is that what we're dealing with here?
I have to get home, and I had made some promises to him, so I have promises to keep and miles to go before I.
All right. Well, listen, we won't see you next. Well, we might see you next week if they change their mind on preempting us, but I'm not sure. Right now, we're planning not to see you next week. So
okay. Well, that will be all your losses, I'm guessing.
Yes, we're looking forward to it. I guess say hi to all your family who have stolen you from us, and we'll see you next time.
And right.
Our phone number 802-321-4225. Someone can please call quickly to make up for this loss.
Not fast enough. Come on.
See the silence. How do you feel that silence?
This is overtime, not overkill.
Overblown. That's what we should be called.
Absolutely. Well, the YouTube chat is throwing around ideas to call in and say things like, Alexa, play Never Gonna Give You Up, or Alexa, turn off the lights. But the joke's on you, folks, because we're all wearing headphones. But yes. Do give us a call at 1-802-321-HACK.
They think we're playing the show through our own speakers? Well, that would be so echoey. It would sound terrible. Wow. And plus, we don't even have one of those stupid things nearby. We have a phone call? All right. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi. I tuned in a little late, but I caught the part where you talked about streaming services, and we're asking if when's the point when people are going to go back to pirating? And I think we've already hit that point.
I think we hit that point years ago, and we're not going back. That's what I think.
I think the situation's gotten bad enough. It's getting popular again. Because, I stopped pirating when, Netflix came along because it was convenient. But now I need 5, 6, whatever services just to keep up on whatever my kids want to watch. It's expensive as the cable I was getting away from in the first place.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's it. The saturation and the, fatigue of trying to find shows you want to watch You can do the same search, and there are a myriad of tools that never left for distribution, torrenting, all of those things that were popular way back before these sorts of phenomena emerged on the market. And it's the equal time spent at zero, at less cost. And people are sharing information about it. New sites and independent efforts are emerging. And there's just a real will to bypass it because it's been made so ugly.
Yeah, you can't possibly keep up with it all. I mean, you know, it started off simple enough. There was Prime, there was Netflix, you know, then you had Peacock, and then Paramount Plus shows up, and Apple Plus, and, you know, you want to see one show, and it's on FedEx Prime, and you're not going to subscribe to that, you know, so it's just ridiculous. How many things do you have to subscribe to, and when are they going to all merge together, and so that you can go back to what you were doing before, which is just watching TV? Oh, sorry.
And we're starting to even see the bundle options where you can subscribe to more than one streaming service at a time.
Yeah, like a market emerged.
Cable companies even trying to get it on it.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's not showing up as a channel on your cable TV now. You know, the Netflix channel or whatever. Even though you're choosing things, they could do interactive on a particular channel and just sort of incorporate it. I don't know. People would probably go for that rather than all these separate places they're paying for. But the thing is, I think a lot of people don't realize they're paying for all these streaming services, because, you know, the amount isn't that great. It's billed automatically to credit cards or bank accounts, and I think many people might have just lost track of what they're actually subscribed to.
And they're definitely counting on you doing that too.
Yeah, I think that's part of the business model. Absolutely. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, the whole Hulu Netflix thing took off in the first place because people were tired of the cable TV business model where you had to subscribe to every little bit of everything separately that you wanted and spend a huge pile of money when everything could be in one place, maybe two places. And that took off like nobody's business. It was wildly successful, and their next move was, well, let's go back to how things were with cable television.
Right, right. And, you know, it wouldn't be so bad, but the interfaces are all terrible. I have not found a single one yet that can handle closing credits in a way that doesn't piss me off. You know, I don't want to have to do all this acrobatic jumping around with my remote just to be able to see who directed the episode I just watched, because, you know, it turns into a little tiny screen and you have to click on something to get it back. But then by the time you do that, that credit is gone. So you have to rewind, and then you rewind and it does the same thing all over again. And God forbid you're just scrolling around looking for something to watch. It starts playing it while you're reading the synopsis. I haven't decided yet. So you wind up not doing that. You wind up scrolling fast and not reading the synopses. And it's just a very stressful situation. You turn off the TV and read a book.
Oh, yeah. And on that thought, you were also mentioning, like, if people are going to adopt other options, they've got to be a lot easier to use. And I know one of the issues, like, in my house is just the sheer number of ads we're seeing on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting, like, two-minute unskippable ads. And at least there's one for YouTube called NewPipe. It's an Android client that is easy enough to use that you can hand it to somebody who is not tech savvy, and they can figure it out.
Okay, NewPipe.
And it is at least, yeah, NewPipe. And it is at least bringing the bar to entry down to where non-tech savvy people would be willing to use it.
See, that's really useful for a lot of the user-generated stuff that you just cannot find on, it's not commercially distributed as like a show. It's like, self-generated, or
and anyone who's uploading content to YouTube, they can also upload content to NewPipe or whatever other things are out there. Unless YouTube turns around and says, no, you can't do that. You can only upload to us. They don't have that kind of control over their users yet, but I'm sure they want it.
Yeah, because NewPipe is just a third-party YouTube client.
I see.
So you get everything on YouTube, but without the ads.
Oh, okay. All right.
And I know I've been on, like, my TV and my smart devices, dealing with the ads just with Pi Hole on Raspberry Pi.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah. But that was just thought I had while listening, so thought I'd share that with you.
Yeah, all right. Well, thanks for that information. That's very handy, and we will spread it around.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, y'all have a good evening.
All right, take care. Thanks for your call.
Take care.
802-321-4225. We're on the air for a little while longer here on YouTube. I like that we're bitching out YouTube and we're on YouTube at the same time. But you notice we don't have ads. And you know, you better not see an ad on our channel, you know, at least on here. I think they're on the Hope videos, which are a different part of the channel, just because we don't know how to turn them off. But there shouldn't. We did an experiment here once just to see how many ads we could get in, and it was mayhem and craziness. But for this, it would be ridiculous to have advertisements. It would be so wrong. But you see them everywhere. 802-321-4225.
Yeah, and as the YouTube chat folks mentioned, Bobcat mentions YouTube keeps breaking new pipe because of that same arms race we were talking about on the Radio Hour, where YouTube is in a constant battle against people who want to make the YouTube experience better, less advertisey, less hinky, less invasive. And it's... YouTube keeps breaking new pipe, and also the new pipe version that you need to install, the official versions, are on the F-Droid store or on GitHub. You can't just get it off the Google Play store. So, you know, it's you have to do a certain amount of muscle on your own phone to get new pipe even working.
And is there a desktop client?
I don't know that there's a desktop client, but that sounds like a
That's one of my other complaints, is that there are too many things that are just geared towards phones, and a lot of us aren't on our phones all the time. There's nothing more, you know, nothing better, I think, than a good old-fashioned desktop, not even a laptop. You know, big screen, big keyboard, can sit back, you know?
Yeah. Generally, you can use the VLC player if you have a YouTube URL that you want to watch, and it will load in the VLC video player software on desktop. But again, you can't navigate the interface and choose new things to watch that way.
VLC is one bit of software that has not ever pissed me off. I wonder why that is. They just consistently seem to do it right.
You can get it to give you less than desirable results.
Have you done that? Have you managed to get VLC?
Mostly because it's so capable in some regards that you throw some things at it that it just is like, no, I can't.
It played a video upside down once. I couldn't figure that out.
It's worked well for me. I've been playing around with their app and using it with various collections of music and media and stuff, and seeing how good it is. It's not bad. We have a call, by the way.
Okay, well, I'll take the call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to know if you guys ever had this experience. I call it Capture Hell, where I'm on YouTube, and I click on a link where to see the email address.
Uh-huh.
And the last few times I've done it, I've gotten like a dozen captures, where it says, click on every box where there's a bicycle.
Oh, my God.
And I do that. And then there's like 10 more of those stupid things.
You know,
is there any way to short-circuit that thing?
The one I hate is the crosswalks, because I check all the crosswalks, because sometimes it's just a little bit of a white line that you see, and that's a crosswalk, so I check it, but I get it wrong. And then the robot says, no, you're not real. You have to do it again. Then it's traffic lights. And they show us these pictures of massive traffic lights with like 18 different lights on them. And that takes at least 5 different little boxes. So you have to check them all, but that's not what they're looking for either. So, you know, you can't read the mind of the robot wanting you to prove you're not a robot. There's got to be a better way.
But I'm saying I do that, but every time the last time I checked for I wanted to see someone's email, I went through that. Mm-hmm. It showed me like 10 or 12 different things, and I just wanted to know, is there any way to short circuit to skip out of that stupid thing?
Well, that's what I'd like to know too, because you know, the fact that you got 10, that means you got it wrong 10 times in its eyes. That's why it keeps giving you new ones, and that's just, you know, they're the ones that are wrong. They don't know their own pictures, and they're assigned in an incorrect way. Rob, did you have something to contribute?
Yeah, sometimes those captures can get stuck in loops when you're using an ad blocker or when you're looking in an incognito mode in browser window or things like that, and it can interfere with that. And yeah, it just adds to the aggravation. So a couple of things to try would be disabling things like that.
Why would an ad blocker make you get lots of captures?
because sometimes it interferes with how the CAPTCHA verifies things through, say, a third-party site that happens to be blocked by the ad blocker or something. It's a mess. It's all a mess.
Huh. Wow.
I don't use any ad blockers, actually, by the way.
See? He's clean.
Yeah, I'm clean.
Well, I recommend it. You might like it.
Yeah. I mean, YouTube, it's good, but I agree with you about the ads, though. The ads are out of control.
Yeah, and they've gotten worse, and the worst ones are the ones in the middle of content. It's just, you know, nobody gains anything from that, and that really should be a rarity if used at all. Rob?
Yeah, speaking of Ted Chiang, I know Alex mentioned him. There was a great science fiction film that was based on one of his short stories called Arrival with Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner. I highly recommend that.
Okay.
And also, I agree with Alex about the Financial Times, great newspaper, uh-huh. And the lunch with so-and-so is really good. And the weekend before Thanksgiving, they have a list of the best books of the year, and it runs for like 3 pages, and it lists about 100 different books.
Wow.
So it's definitely worth reading. Great newspaper.
Rob, did you have something else? And,
Yeah, just a tip from the YouTube chat. Bobcat mentions that the CAPTCHA is not checking that you clicked everything. It's checking how your mouse moved as well, just to make sure you're a human being moving your mouse like a person.
What the hell does that mean? How am I supposed to move my mouse?
I don't understand that. Yeah, I don't understand that.
How dare a robot judge me if I'm human? I swear to God.
Yeah, well, I guess it's another reason to switch to something other than YouTube.
Yeah.
But if I find anything, I'll let you guys know. Anything,
thank you.
Promise.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks. All right. How about Chinese YouTube? I'm desperate enough to go there and use whatever they use. Of course, it's probably going to be censored to hell and back, but still.
But are you desperate enough to learn Chinese so you can navigate their site and search for things you want?
How I don't already know Chinese.
That's a very good point.
Right. All right. 802-321-4225. We only have a few minutes left, so let's see who else is out there.
Yeah, do other things. Do other things.
Other things, yes.
But you don't have to watch what's on YouTube. You realize, like, you might use it incidentally, and then you get sort of drawn into it. And that itself is, unhealthy. There's other things out there to do.
That's true. That's true. Don't let the algorithm run your life.
No calls. Go ahead, Rob.
Sorry. Another thing I like to do about this is was actually suggested by someone in the chat as well, which is use the software YT-DLP. Which is a command line tool to download a video from YouTube. It doesn't work on all of them. It doesn't work on ones with DRM and stuff. But if you are able to just download a video off of YouTube, and then you have a video file that you can watch anytime, any place, in any way that you want, and skip around to your heart's content.
That's true. You can also save it as audio,
mm-hmm.
if you prefer that.
Yeah, that kind of struck me, like, if the paid subscription accounts have a better ability to... get copies of content, or if they themselves have to chase down people who are using the accounts to record and otherwise copy things commercial free and distribute them as a third party, like if that's policed in any way, and what kinds of experiences both people that are trying those things as well as what observers of content like that have to do to circumvent a lot of this. I'm very curious. Users at home, like if there's ways of pirating stuff once you've got a paid for account, because I imagine that's how a lot of these other platforms come up with it. If they're not doing something like YouTube Downloader, go ahead, Rob.
Our listener, Alexius, mentions on the YouTube chat that their 11-year-old, who is listening, awesome, hello to you, says the CAPTCHA also connects to your search history to make sure it's human, which I would find slightly troubling if that's how it works.
If that's true, it'll be a big scandal. So let's prove it, because that's definitely a step beyond anything that they should be doing.
But it is awesome that you're listening to this with your kid, and we love to hear about that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks for the comment.
And this, I'm told, by the way, is setting a record for a YouTube broadcast that is tearing down YouTube more than usually. Usually YouTube broadcasts don't do that, and yeah, we went there, And we're telling you what's bad about YouTube and why we need something better. And and we'll continue to do that.
Or what to do were it to just all go away? Because they seem disinterested in having it work the way it had worked. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a little alienation and realization in some of the other stories. You know, well, what would we do if it wasn't really viewable, if it wasn't watchable in the same way? It's not the public utility that we've come to know it as, and it can be that they change the way you have access to it very quickly to meet their interests and not necessarily those of their creators and people that view it all the same.
When did Google buy YouTube? Because I think that's when things started to go wrong. Yeah, ask Google.
I want to say...
you're going there, right? That's who else are you going to ask?
Pre-2010.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think...
It looks like, according to DuckDuckGo, it was...
good on
it
you.
It was October of 2006.
Oh, really? Well, I mean, yeah, Google wasn't around much longer before then.
That sounds about right.
Wow, okay. So they've been screwing it up for a while.
Huh. Well, or going back to it for different... models of revenue extraction.
You know, we should use the Wayback Machine and archive.org and visit YouTube back in, like, you know, 2004 or something, and see what it was like then, before Google. If I have my history right, I mean, they did exist before Google, right? Before Google bought them. So I'd like to know more about that. And what the vision of the original developers was.
Absolutely. And that's the thing that, like, we're introduced to products that themselves have a vision, but the overall goal of a platform like YouTube became sort of I think the observations alongside the complaints we have are that it may have lost its way, right? And what happens when it's kind of not really performing the same function in people's eyes?
Wow. Okay. I'm looking it up, and Google, or YouTube rather, was started in 2005, and Google bought it in 2006. So it chugged away for a whole year before it was absorbed by the monolith.
Well, that must have been a special time. Wow. Okay. Well, I'm sorry I didn't appreciate it more then. It probably was a lot better though, you know, in the early days after the acquisition too. But it's certainly going downhill with all the advertising and pressure to pay them to stop advertising. It's just so wrong. Anyway, that's how we started. Now we're going to end by complaining about Google and YouTube. That's going to do it for us tonight. Thank you for the people who called. And write to us, oth@2600.com. Get involved in HOPE. You can be a volunteer. You can be part of all kinds of different teams. And you can have a great time. July 12th through 14th, hope.net. And anything else we need to tell people? Were there meetings last week, Rob?
There were meetings last week. You know, I went to our local one. It was a lot of fun and great to see some folks. A lot of new faces still popping up, which is excellent. And also some very old faces coming back, which is also excellent.
You know, I've been told by a number of people, which is kind of odd, that Canada's having a problem with meetings. In fact, there are no more meetings in Canada at all. The ones that came back after the pandemic evaporated, and no one else has come forward. I don't know. Did all the hackers disappear in Canada? It doesn't seem right. We used to have so many. We used to have Toronto. We had Montreal. We had Winnipeg. We had Vancouver. Bunch of others. Details, 2600.com/meetings. You get the guidelines there. If you're in Canada, consider starting a 2600 meeting. They're you know, easy to start, fun to run, and you know, you're basically opening up minds and inspiring people to do all kinds of cool things. Just ask people who have gone to 2600 meetings over the years since we started back in 1987. It's changed people's lives. So I know some of the best hackers come from Canada. I'd like to see that come back and be a force to reckon with again.
Absolutely.
All right. On that note, we're going to say goodnight and see you either next week or in 2 weeks.
Good night.